welcome to Theology on Tuesday. My name is Justin, this is Brian, and we are delighted that you are here. If this is your first time, you'll see these little sheets of paper around the room. The way the evening works is Brian and I will talk for about 30 minutes about a certain topic. Tonight's topic is going to be awesome. And after that, and really throughout that time, you can submit any question you want to us. That was one of the ideas when we came up with this. Is like, what happens if two priests walk into a bar and you could ask anything you wanted? Yep. And so that's behind some of what we do here.
That's right. And it's true. You can ask anything.
So just scan that top QR code at any point. It doesn't have to. That question doesn't have to do anything with what we're talking about tonight, but we would do our best to answer it as succinctly as possible. You can join our email list on that bottom left QR code, and that's going to be really important because the topic tonight is transitions, and lo and behold, we are going to have to transition slightly here, especially with the schedule. We've advertised for some time about our summer schedule, and then I got a text today at about 2 o'clock saying, Henry's is closing on Tuesdays until Labor Day. And I was like, oh no, we're supposed to meet tonight. But they were so gracious, and they allowed us to meet in here. If you haven't realized it yet, we don't have a bar. They have some staffing being shorthand tonight. But there is a bar out around the back near the VIP room. If you just walk out, go outside, and down on the right is the bar there if you want to get something
to
drink.
Our normal bartender is up there, and he'll be happy to help you out.
Totally. He's pulling double duty today. But we're so grateful for Henry's and Clark and all the opportunity and hospitality they give us. Also, I saw Alexandra. There she is. How you doing? And I don't know if Meredith is here. I didn't see Meredith. Okay. But Alexandra's up here on the steps. She is one of the folks who gets to coordinate Holy City Life. It's a group of folks in their 20s who have fellowship opportunities outside of this. So if you're interested in making some more friendships or being around friends outside of Theology on Tuesday, talk to her. We'd love for you to get connected there. Tonight, as I said, we're talking about transitions, navigating life's transitions. And you know what? This is not only timely for us, but I think it's more probably one of the most important topics if you're in your 20s. We did a few months ago, I think it was now, that we did Meg Jay's Defining Decade, which was a great book. But your 20s are filled with all sorts of transition, even after that. So really at any point, but especially in your 20s. So we might do a little series on this. We'll see how it goes tonight. But we thought it would be really helpful to address the idea of, you know, how do you navigate all the changes, all the things that happen? What does the Bible say as to how you can do that wisely? And so I'd love to know where you'd like to start us off in answering that, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that is really important about talking about transitions is that transitions, as you probably have figured out at this point in your life, transitions are inevitable. There are transitions in your 20s and 30s that happen in every area of your life. Leaving your parents' house is a transition. Going to college is a transition. Graduating from college or dropping out of college is a transition. Finding a job is a transition. Changing friend groups is a transition. Moving to a new city is a transition. Changing jobs, going to grad school. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on. And the problem that I think happens for so many of us is we're so caught up in the busyness of our day-to-day lives that we don't actually think about the transitions that we're going through. And we don't think, what does it look like to flourish through a transition? We more often sort of go blindly into them and all of a sudden find ourselves in this emotional whirlwind that we weren't necessarily expecting because we haven't really thought very much about it. So I think part of what we want to accomplish through talking about this is to get the idea across that being intentional about approaching transitions is something that can be really helpful.
Totally. Yeah, having the right expectations is a huge, maybe half the battle, I don't even know. But, you know, transitions, as I was thinking about this, they often, if they're going fine and going well, you're not thinking about them. But more often than not, it's the transitions that are hard and going poorly that grab your attention. I'd be curious, if you can think of any in your own life that went especially well and maybe some that went poorly, and what separated the two? What are some key ingredients there? something comes to mind.
Oh my gosh. Well, I would say one of the ones that went really badly that I've probably talked about too much in here before was the transition from PortaGaud to college at Duke. And I had literally everything that could go wrong. I was so not prepared for it because I'd been taught all through high school that the greatest years of your life are going to be when you're in college. And if you get into that right college, everything is going to be so awesome. You're going to have like the best time ever. And I got to Duke and I had crazy professor. I thought I was going to be a piano performance major. I had a professor that had this like silver rod that he used to beat my hands with. And I was only 17. I didn't know that was like not normal. And then I had my promiscuously bisexual drug dealer roommate. And it, it was just more, it was just a lot. It was a lot on every front. And I was not prepared and it was ugly. And I transferred and thank heavens I did. And which leads me to the good transition. When I went to Furman from Duke, that was an amazing experience. And part of it was that I knew what I didn't want after what I had experienced at Duke. And also I had prayed a lot about it. And lo and behold, there were a whole wonderful group of Christian people that I just accidentally ran into at Furman, who got me deeply involved in fellowship, deeply involved in a church, and I flourished from the get-go.
Nice. Yeah, that's, well, similar to that, I think of almost the exact way you phrased the first one, transitioning from PortaGaud to Duke, which is exactly what I did. That went terribly for me. I didn't have any of what you had, thankfully.
I'm very happy.
Yeah, that sounds indeed like a lot, but yeah, I think a lot of folks, especially entering into college, can be a challenge, but thankfully, leaving college was one that can, having done college ministry for a time, I often found that was the more difficult transition. Mm-hmm. We brought a book tonight that in some ways we're working off of called After College, Navigating.
This is a great book.
It's really good. Yeah, Navigating Transitions, Relationships, and Faith. And so one of the things that I like about this is she acknowledges that it is, and this will be up here if you want to check it out, take a picture of it, but she acknowledges that that time after college, because many people think it's the best 4 years ever, and that's kind of a lie for the most part. Now, for some, I found that's the minority, for sure. But leaving college, they were unexpected challenges on any number of levels that proved very, very difficult. Yep. And so for me, I think one of the things that I just was not prepared for Duke and college life. I wish that I'd been more intentional, and that was the word that keeps coming up, in trying to surround myself with folks that were like-minded. Now, it's great to have, obviously you're gonna be in a place with some level of diversity, but finding folks who were gonna encourage me in my faith, I could have been far more intentional about that. But I will say after college, one of the things that was, you know, this tyranny of choice is one of the things that we'll probably keep coming back to, is that there's so many options and there's so many different pathways that you can go, and you just gotta make a choice in some ways and make it, you know, have counselors, ask them for their wisdom and advice, pray, think about it, but you've gotta be decisive in making a choice. And thankfully I did that, and things really started to snowball in a positive way after that, I think.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that can be so difficult, particularly when you're leaving college, is that most people, as we go through school, we kind of have people that we are thrown with that we eventually get to be friends with. And you just sort of take for granted that there are people around that it's easy to be friends with. It's not necessarily difficult where you have to take a lot of initiative to make friends. But when you graduate from college, especially if you move to a city that you're not from, all of a sudden you're in this strange place and none of the people that you know are there. And so it can be really, really difficult to sort of know which way is up with that. And the other thing that I think happens in friendships is that a lot of times if we move to a new place, we've been thriving in a particular community and then we just leave it. And we don't ever like think about which relationships am I gonna try to keep going while I'm not in this place anymore? which people do I need to say goodbye to? We just sort of leave it all hanging, and that creates a lot of stress.
Yeah, it totally does. And, you know, one of the things, when you think about any number of transitions, obviously after college is one that maybe for a lot of people in this room it is either a recent one, but it could be jobs, it could be a transition into engagement or marriage, whatever it is. You know, all transitions have a begin, basically an ending to the previous thing, mm-hmm. this kind of awkward middle stage, a neutral zone, so to speak, and then a new beginning.
Yep.
And no matter what the transition is, you have those three periods. I'd love, I'm getting some of this from William Bridges, who's a transition theorist, which apparently I didn't even know, but she talks about this in there, in the book, that especially when it comes to ending this other season well. Mm-hmm. What are some things, in your opinion, that are either dangers to avoid or things to really be proactive in doing to make ending well possible?
Yeah, so I think one of the most important things that is in very short supply in most of our lives is to actually spend some time reflecting on that question. Because I think that when we are leaving one phase of life or one situation and moving to another, one of the things that's really important is to look back and reflect and think about how have I learned, how have I grown in this period, what are the things the Lord has taught me here, what are the relationships that God has been using in my life, how has this time and this experience changed me or helped me to grow, and to reflect on that, and then to spend some time being grateful for that. And that may mean writing some notes to some people, it may mean expressing that gratitude, but it also means owning that gratitude internally. So I think that's a really important practice. Another practice that I think is important is to realize that, for example, if you're leaving college and you have had a wonderful college experience and you have 50 friends that you're used to hanging out with at least once every 2 weeks or so, you can't keep doing that when you move to a new city. And you have to spend some time praying through, this is all assuming you're a Christian, praying through and discerning who are those people that God is calling you to continue to be invested in your life. Because you can't be long-distance relationship invested with 50 friends. That's just not going to happen. And what often happens is we try to do that, and what ends up happening is all of those relationships fail because we have not been able to pay sufficient attention. So I think realizing your limits is important, and also praying for an open heart toward what the Lord has for you in this next chapter. Because I think sometimes if you're in a place where you are flourishing, it's really hard to let go of that, and you want to keep looking back. And I just was preaching about this on Sunday. Looking back in the Bible is never something that ends well. You can remember Lot's wife back in the book of Genesis. She looked back and she got turned into a pillar of salt. I'm not saying that's going to happen to you, but looking back does not make for flourishing.
Yeah, there are a couple things that I want to go back to what you said on. The very fact that, actually think about the fact that you're ending one season. So often, at least in my own life, it's the excitement about a new season or even the dread of a new season that I'm so fixated on the future that I almost don't even realize that this particular season that I'm in is going to end. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, again, half the battle is realizing this is going to come to a close. I love in the book she talks about the image of if you're going to renovate a room in your house, you're going to have to dismantle it to some degree, right? Like if you're going to renovate your bathroom, you may have to knock down some walls. And the idea is that maybe literally, but at least figuratively, thinking about what are the things that you have to dismantle in this past season. You alluded to, you know, what your friendships may look like. If you're in college, and I saw this all the time, where you're around people who are within 4 years of your age, and you spend 99.9% of your time.
And they live right next to you.
And you're within a mile proximity, so it's easy to see them all, you're confronted with them all the time, to now being in a workplace where you're actually surrounded, more likely than not, with folks who are very different from you in terms of age and that sort of thing. And by the way, they move. All of my friends moved across the country. Everybody in my wedding, all my groomsmen, literally moved across the country.
Right.
And I was not prepared for that. But recognizing that and coming to grips with it is really important. And giving yourself permission to grieve and to more like to be sad that this some of the things you're going to lose. It's okay when you're experiencing loss to mourn that, and you should do that. That's part of the process in being able to navigate the transition well, is to reflect on and to actually be sad. It's okay to be sad over some of those things that are going to be lost. But you talk about as you begin to move into this next season, to be intentional in being grateful and thinking about some of these things. But it doesn't happen overnight that you just automatically are in this wonderfully competent new season. Often there's this, like if you think about when Israel was supposed to leave Egypt, there's the hard and fast leaving this old life, but they were in the wilderness for 40 years.
Yep.
And it can feel like a wilderness in this kind of neutral zone in between time before you reach the promised land of what your hopes and dreams are for the season that you're really hoping will begin. What words of wisdom would you have for navigating that wilderness time well?
Yeah, so I think one of the things when you're in that wilderness time, which always happens in a transition, is to go back to St. Augustine. One of these days we're going to do a series on St. Augustine.
And yes.
He is so underappreciated. But one of the things Augustine talks about a lot is the whole idea of rightly ordered loves. And he says when you love things in the right priority, then your life will flourish. But if you put them in the wrong priority of what you're loving, what ends up happening is frustration and despair and all sorts of things like that. And so I think that one of the things when you're in that wilderness time is to really intentionally focus on rightly ordering your loves. And what I mean by that is that, again, if you're a Christian, following Augustine's rule, what he would say is we are created by God to be in relationship with him, and as the Westminster Catechism says, to enjoy him forever. And so the first thing would be to lean into your relationship with God. Make sure that you are daily in God's word and in prayer, and that you are making a top priority to find a church body where you can be deeply engaged. If that's the first thing you do when you're in this wilderness time, that will set you up for success. But a lot of times that's not what we do, and we're more likely to focus on trying to meet people or trying to find our like dream apartment or you know whatever it might be. And we get, and not that those are not important things, but we get them out of order. And so I think engaging first with your top priority, your spiritual life, that is really, really key. Because otherwise, if you start getting invested in some of these other things, what will happen is that you will not ever get that first love rightly placed, and then your life is going to be out of kilter.
Yeah. And I think recognizing that more often than not, even if you prayed, even if you sought wise counsel and you made like what it seemed on all accounts as a very wise and good decision to go and do this next thing, oftentimes what I experience with in my own life and other folks is your immediate knee-jerk reaction when you're in that wilderness is,
yep,
I've made the wrong decision.
Right.
It's not going, I'm not in the promised land yet.
Right.
Like, this is really
right.
Hard. And the gut reaction is to either do one of two things. It's either to like immediately jump and try to go back to Egypt,
yep,
which is probably not a good idea.
Yep.
Or it is to cope in unhealthy ways.
Yes.
We'll just say that. And I think one of the biggest dangers is finding relief from suffering. And how you engage I don't know if we've done one on suffering, but I think that's what Christianity talks about when it talks about suffering is so transformative, so countercultural, and having a robust view of what it means to suffer, and that this isn't exactly something that you should just push eject on, even though that's our...
Or medicate away.
Or in any sort of ways. I mean, there can be any sort of addictions or drugs or relationships or just acting out in any kind of way that more often than not people do as a way to, I don't want to feel bad in this time. But if you think about it, if you're starting a new job, if you're entering something new, you're not going to be perfectly competent right off the bat. And so you're going to have to transition into learning this new season, and it can feel like a desert wilderness.
Yeah.
And One of the things, we've talked about this study before, but there was an experiment that was done on folks for experiencing solitude and silence, and how long could they go without actually, they were given like a button that they could press that would give them a minor dose of electric shock. You know this study? Have you heard of this before? Yeah. And the average person made it anywhere from 6 to 14 minutes of silence and solitude. And almost all of them decided to press the button. They'd rather be shocked than be by themselves without a device or a book or anything. And in this season of wilderness and the in-between, I would say this is probably the most important time to actually journal, to read your Bible, to especially the book of Psalms, where you're in this in-between and you're struggling, to pray and reflect on that and allow yourself to be in sorrow, I guess. And that's okay, but not sorrow without hope, because I think hope is a huge element in navigating transition.
Yes, definitely. And at the risk of recommending something that sounds crazy, I would really encourage you to go back and find the old Veggie Tale about leaving the promised land. I can't remember what the title of this particular one is, but leaving Egypt, not leaving the promised land. But in the VeggieTale, they've left Egypt and they're in the wilderness wandering, and they have this whole attitude, and it's so easy for all of us to fall into this, that you look back and you look with rose-colored glasses on what the past was, and everything was perfect. And if we could just get back to that, it would be so great. So in the VeggieTale, I think it's the peas that are talking. So the peas are out there, and they're like, it was so great when we were in Egypt. We had meat to eat every night, and there were leeks in the stew, and the food was great. And we're out here in the desert, and it just sucks. And
then, they didn't say that.
Well, they didn't say that, but that's what they meant. And then the little asparagus or whatever in the back of the pipes up, he's like, but wait, we were in slavery. And that's exactly right.
Yeah.
But we are so like that. We are prone to over-glamorize the past when we're in those wilderness times, and we become obsessed with longing for what we can't have anymore. And that is a profoundly unhelpful place to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's the term the first year fog is often something. Whenever you are in this next season, that first year you can be like in a fog where you can either look back to the way it was and have rose-colored glasses, or look anywhere else and the grass is always greener. That's, I think, one of the biggest struggles when you're in this time. And I think one of the most important things, whether it's deciding on where to go to church or a job, don't just push eject after 3 weeks.
Yeah.
To actually try and give it a season, and you'll find naturally that, and maybe there are exceptions to this. Would there be any times that you would say, no, you actually really need to get out of that immediately?
Maybe, but I would say that would be unusual.
Yeah, more often
than
not.
And I would not do that without seeking counsel of somebody who's an older, wiser Christian in your life.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's helpful. Well, eventually, usually it gets to the promised land.
Mm-hmm.
How do you navigate starting well in a new place?
Yeah, I think, again, part of that is using that wisdom from St. Augustine of making the main thing on the front end. I've met so many people that when they move to a new city or they start a new school, if they really make finding good biblical teaching and fellowship their top priority, almost invariably, those people flourish where they are. People that, on the other hand, make that a lower priority often end up feeling lonely and sad and disconnected. And so I think that is something that is really important as you enter into this new phase. And the second thing is to realize that this new phase that you're in, this promised land phase, it will not, if you were really happy in the stage you were before, it may not look like that. Sometimes we think what we need to do is to rebuild exactly what we had before, but the Lord may have something completely different for you in terms of ministry or relationships or whatever. And I think having an open heart toward that is really important. And there's another saying that I think is attributed to St. Augustine, where he talks about God wanting us to give us things But the problem is that instead of holding our hands out empty to receive from him, we are holding our hands like this because we're clasping on to something. And so I think going into that promising phase with your hands open and saying, Lord, I'm open to what you have for me here. Even if it's something new and different, I'm going to embrace that.
Yeah, there's so many different angles or perspectives we could do on this topic, which I'm kind of eager to do, I think. But if you think about like friendships or maybe a career or something like that, like let's just take friendships, for example. It means actually setting healthy expectations mm-hmm. with your friends. You know, if you live, one of my friends lived across the country, and it's like our hope was that we would try to get together once a year and in person. But it was not realistic. And that's one of the biggest struggles I had was just how unrealistic it was to continue on conversing, whether even by text or phone. And sometimes it's important to say, you know what, we really should like have somewhat of a clean break and maybe just
and
do
go from
planted where you are. But where in whatever angle you choose to think about this, the Lord has called you at one time in one place, and he's calling you to something else. And so one of the things about ending well is, are there any things you need to finish in that calling, whether it's task or people, and to do those with the appropriate amount of energy and realization, I guess, for what's lying ahead. But if you think about being in the promised land, he's called you there for something, mm-hmm. and that is a spiritual calling that's going to have, you know, your spiritual life. It's going to have implications on your relationships and your family. And I think the important thing is to begin, if you haven't begun, you should begin to invest yourself with every intention and every ounce of hope you have. I would say don't resist the temptation towards cynicism.
Yes.
We're in a cynical age about so many things, and social media reinforces that. But be obnoxiously hopeful about this next season and apply yourself to that, I would say.
And I would say obnoxiously grateful as well.
Totally.
One of the things that characterizes our culture is complaining. And it's really easy, especially in a workplace, to find people that want to complain. And if you want to join them, they will welcome you into that complaining. And you can all just spend all your time like, this place is so bad. These people are so terrible. Blah, 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 blah. But the interesting thing is there's a huge amount of psychological research that has been done in the past 10 years. And basically, all of that research together says that complaining and venting, which our culture says that's what you need to do in order to feel better, that is literally the worst thing you can do for your mental health. And if you're on the receiving end of someone else doing that, it will take you like straight down with them. On the other hand, the same research shows that practicing gratitude, looking even in circumstances that are not great, looking for the things that you can be thankful for, that leads to flourishing and joy and hopefulness. And I would say that's not a surprise because the scriptures tell us that we are to give thanks in all circumstances. And as we've said many times in here, all truth is God's truth. And so we shouldn't be surprised that humans flourish when they do what the scriptures say.
Yeah, that's so good about practicing gratitude. And, you know, as we're talking about this, one of the things that come, if you're not a journal person, it might be a time in a transition or approaching a transition or just after a recent transition to begin trying to do that.
Yeah.
Because if you are like on a hunt for, even if you're in a miserable place and it's not going as you thought, there can be some things that you can find to be grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so much more important. You know, it's not, as you were talking about complaining and grumbling, I was like, well, that was literally the sin of the Israelites in the wilderness. And it's so easy to do that, and it prolonged their time
in
the wilderness.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Any final thoughts you have before we throw it open to questions? Or
just, again, to go back to that idea of being intentional, I don't know where each of you is in your own life in terms of these transitions, but if you are in one, I think, paraphrasing something our rector often says, everybody is either in a transition, getting ready to go into a transition, or coming out of a transition. And being aware of where you are on that continuum is important, and then being intentional about embracing it.
Fantastic. All right. Wes, how are we doing on questions?
We're looking good. We have 14.
All right. I don't know if I turned it on.
There you are.
All right.
Okay. Take a second and scan the QR codes. Upvote any questions you like and ask any questions you have. It is anonymous. I will ask them for you. Are you guys ready?
We're always ready.
Okay. Number one. It just switched. Sorry. Number one, what is your favorite scripture to read and pray on as you contemplate a potential transition?
That's an easy one for me. It's Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. I love that, because what it says is that when you trust in the Lord with all your heart, and don't lean on your own understanding, your own thoughts and prejudices and ideas about things. When you make that your top priority, he will make your path straight. And I think there's huge assurance in that.
There are a couple. The call of Abraham in Genesis 12, when he is called to leave everything that was comfortable for him and to go to a place that he had no idea where he was even going. God just said, go to a country that I'll show you in the future. And by the way, leave everything.
Yeah.
In a great place that he seemed to be. That is something that I tend to think about. I also love Psalm 46. God is a very present help in times of trouble. Though the earth gives way, though the waters roar and foam, God is in the midst of his people. And
yeah.
That is that whole song, Be Still and Know That I Am God, right? I think is a place that I tend to go to.
Yeah. Nice. Great question.
Thank you. How do you know if a place, career, or relationship is not where God wants you to be?
That is an excellent question. So I think that is one of those where the best answer is it depends. Because I think it really does depend. But I think if you are concerned that maybe you are not where God wants you to be, one of the very best things you can do, first of all, is to pray into that and say, Lord, if you desire for me to be here, please show me by opening the right doors and closing the other doors. On the other hand, if this is not where you want me to be, I pray that you would show me very clearly about that. So I think praying into that is really important. I think if you genuinely are struggling and believe that perhaps you've made a mistake in discerning what God's will for you is, that is a great time to seek the counsel of older and wiser Christians. Maybe even if you have Christian parents, I know it's frightening to ask parents for advice sometimes, but if you have Christian parents, that's maybe a good question to ask them. If you have friends that are deep in their faith, to ask them to search what the scriptures have to say about it. What I would also say is that it is just because things are not easy, that doesn't mean that you're not in the center of what God's will for you is. I think sometimes in our culture, we tend to think, if I'm struggling, this must not be right. But when you look in scripture and look into the examples of people of faith, very often they are in the midst of struggle right when they are where God wants them to be.
Yeah, I would agree. I think my hesitancy would be almost on any circumstance to be like, you need to get out of there. Because even if you're in a job or maybe in a certain kind of relationship, I would say that. But like, if we're talking about a career, a vocation, chances are, even if you, like, so one of the things that came to my mind was, to the degree that you really prayed and searched the scriptures and sought biblical counsel, sometimes you just, I mean, I know people who literally don't give much thought. They just kind of go with the flow and they end up where they are. That may be a season where God may be actually calling you to be, as we're saying, intentional about thinking about where he may call you. Mm-hmm. But even in those circumstances, I believe in the hand of God working in a very kind of natural way. And there's more likely than not a way for you to be faithful in your current context. I'd say 9 out of 10 times,
yeah.
Something like that. Like, So I'm just very hesitant on being like, you need to get out of there. But doing what you, exactly what you said, seeking wise counsel, people who will actually not just agree with you, oh, that sucks, you should leave, like, but who love the Lord and who know you and your gifts and your weaknesses, and who will be willing to say, the way you're currently living right now is not conducive to a vibrant faith and healthy relationships. I think you got to have somebody who's going
to speak the truth
and
love.
Listen to them. Those are things.
All right. How can you establish new expectations during a time or during a season of change without relying on the same expectations from a previous season?
That, I think, is something that is a challenge. And I think part of that is, again, taking that time to reflect, which we so often don't reflect or take the time to reflect. And I think one of the things that can be really helpful is to take some time to actually analyze what your past situation was and what your current situation is, and looking at what's different. Because I think a lot of times we don't do that. And we just expect that all of the parameters of our life before and our parameters of our life in our new situation are the same. And very often they're not. And so what that means is that some of the things that might have been expectations before are profoundly unrealistic where we are now. But there may be, in the new place that we are, things that there could be expectations that were not possible where we were in the previous place. So I think taking that time, and that may be something that's helpful to work through with a friend who knows you really well and to talk through those things, because moving from one city to another or from one job to another or from college to working or from singleness to being in a committed relationship, all those things are really different. And so the expectations in each one of those situations is profoundly different from where you were before.
I'm curious what your mind went to as you thought of this question. There's so many different things. Expectations about what, right? Like, I could think of how you spend your time, the kinds of friends you'll have, what those friendships will look like. I mean, one of the things that came to my mind was premarital counseling with this couple who, this guy played golf every day, and I was like, you're not going to be able to do that. Like, you're not going to have a good marriage. Like, and he was like, we hope to have children soon. I'm like, you're not connecting the dots.
Yeah.
And I think that is, whatever it is, and the challenging thing in this is, like, you're not going to know all the time exactly what your day-to-day, week-to-week is going to look like. Now, to the extent that you do, be faithful with that information. Mm-hmm. I love talking about getting a calendar, get a day timer, get something, and plan it out. That's really helpful reflecting tool, is to actually think about, what are my weeks going to look like? If you are in that situation where you're about to go to a transition, or if you're a friend of somebody who's about to go into that, the best thing I could say is, if you don't happen to have a whole lot of clarity, give more time than you think. Give lots of margin.
Yes.
And be the kind of person that is a gracious friend, but who will ask those kinds of difficult questions of, I know this is a challenging season. What does this look like for you?
Mm-hmm.
How are you finding the extra time right now? How are you organizing your priorities with the time that you do have? And falling forward with grace is one of the biggest things with friendships. Is it can be really easy to demand so much. But if you know a friend, or if you know you're going into a season where your friendships, it's going to be dicey with the amount of time you just don't have, name that.
Right.
And plan to have some sort of margin, but also hope to work into a season where you can have realistic and good and right friendships and time that you're spending once you get to a certain deadline.
Yeah.
So much to that question, I feel like. I hope that's helpful.
All right.
Next one.
What is the difference between looking back and reflecting?
Ooh. Oh, that's a good question. So I think that in some ways they're the same, because reflecting necessarily involves looking back. But I would say part of the difference is looking back with rose-colored glasses. I think that reflecting means looking back and thinking about, these are the things that were beautiful in this season. These are the things that were difficult in this season. These are the things that were hopes that were never realized in this season. And sort of assessing all of those things and holding all of that together. I think that Just looking back and sort of longing to recreate the past, that's very different from reflection. So reflection is taking what I would call a clear-eyed look at every aspect of whether it's the good, the bad, or the ugly.
Yeah. You know, so you don't know this, but I watch, you and I both preached on the same passage this past Sunday. I was in a different church preaching. But of course, we quoted the exact same thing by J.C. Ryle. And I laugh because we often
do that.
You'll say something, I'll be like, that was right there in my notes.
Yep.
But J.C. Ryle, and the passage in the gospel was about Jesus saying, no one who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is fit for the kingdom of God. And he does draw attention to Lot's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he says this line that I think gets at, when we say looking back versus reflecting, the major difference is those who look back, like Lot's wife, they want to go back.
Right.
And I think that's where the distinction is your heart. Where is your heart? Even in the grief, to grieve well is to apply your heart to this next season that God is calling you. It's to let go of, to mourn, but your heart ultimately is where God is calling you next, not in the season behind.
Yes, that's exactly what I think. That's cool. We quoted the same thing once again.
Yeah, I laughed out loud when I listened to you.
All right. How much suffering is too much suffering?
Don't ask God that, because he'll always say,
yes, that's like praying for patience.
Yeah.
So I think that is not a question that is really possible to answer. I think that sometimes if every single thing seems to be going wrong in your life, and every single thing that you try seems to end up a dead end, that may be God trying to get your attention. And when God is trying to get your attention through suffering, one of the best things you can do is to pause and say, Lord, there seems to be a lot of suffering here. What is it that you are trying to speak to me? Open my ears and open my heart that I can hear you.
The verse that came to my mind is 1 Corinthians 10:13. There's some source of suffering that we inflict upon ourselves when we are lured away into temptation. And the verse that came to my mind is, God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with the temptation, he will also provide the way of escape, that you may be able to endure it. So if you're thinking of suffering that is related to temptation and doing things you know you shouldn't do, and it's, I can't say no to this, and I want, God is faithful. He will give you what you need. If you look to him and ask him, he will provide the way of escape. Sometimes suffering comes at us, and we didn't choose that
right.
in any way.
Right.
And in those moments, one of the quotes that I absolutely love is by Dorothy Sayers. And I think this is really important, because we do face suffering in transitions.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is the mourning and the realization of the loss, that what we once were in will not be the same.
Right. Yeah.
And in the time, going back to that question on what do you meditate on, this is one of those things that honestly comes to my mind a lot. We've quoted this before. She says, whatever reason God chose to make man as he is, limited and suffering and subject to sorrows and death, he had the honesty and the courage to take his own medicine. Whatever game he's playing with creation, he's kept his own rules and played fair. He can exact nothing from man that he has not exacted from himself. He's gone through the whole of human experience, from trivial irritations of family life, the cramping restrictions of hard work and lack of money, to the worst horrors of pain and humiliation, defeat and death. And when he was the man, he played the man. He was born in poverty, died in disgrace, and thought it well worthwhile.
Yeah.
I love that, because at the end of the day, how much suffering is too much suffering? Well, you look to what Jesus endured, and you go, wow, I will never go, not just physical suffering like that, but suffering the weight of the sins of the world, cosmic suffering.
We're not even close.
And, and that he chose to do that as a way of example, that we can endure whatever he sends our way. And he himself was willing to do it for us.
Yeah.
All right. Trying to find a job, what can we take spiritually for those who have been going through a long job search and getting turned down frequently?
Yes. So long job search, getting turned down frequently, is one of those places that is really hard to be. And again, that is one of those times where I think going back to St. Augustine is really important, because what can happen when you're in that situation is it becomes so, getting that new job becomes almost your idol, and it's all you can think about. But the fact of the matter is that is only a portion of your life and only a portion of who God has created you to be. So I think investing deeply in your spiritual life is really important. Praying that God would open the right doors is really important. And one of the other things when you're in that season, it can be really easy to become self-centered when you are in that season, because you're thinking all the time about yourself and needing to get this job. I think very proactively putting yourself into a place where you're serving others can be really, really important. I also think that using the people that God has put in your path as resources is really important, because I know so many people in their 20s, when they're trying to do a job search, that they think the answer to that is to fill out a gazillion applications on websites and that eventually the right one is going to happen for them. And that just doesn't work. And I think it's much better to think about who has God put in my path that I could talk to, who might give me wise counsel, and maybe might have some connections.
I immediately thought of the Meg J. Defining Decade chapter we did on career.
Yes.
That was exactly what she said. It's often not through just that those million things online. It's actually in-person, face-to-face relationships that you have. Even if they're mere acquaintances, that kind of personal relationship goes a long way. It's a good question. I think of two kind of pitfalls to this question. On the one hand, you've got those who, in my experience, they may fill out a lot of things, but it's kind of half-hearted.
Yeah.
And I'd say beware of doing too many things half-heartedly. Do less things and put your whole heart into it would be important. And I'm so glad you said what you said to begin with. Find it's so easy to experience rejection from a job as a personal attack against
right.
who you
yeah.
are. And your identity in those times is so critical. But the verse that came to my mind for this one, again, it's a form of suffering as you're
mm-hmm.
doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's real, because the job market can be really challenging. But in Romans 5, verse 3 and 4, we rejoice in our sufferings, which is crazy to think about. And if you have a good sense of your identity, you can actually go, you know what? That's not what God has for me right now.
Right.
And I'm okay, because he does
and
have
I'm
something.
Grateful that I didn't get that.
That's a,
yeah.
Amen to that. Yeah. So we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance. Endurance produces character, and character produces hope. And hope doesn't put us to shame, because God's love has been poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Endurance in that season is probably the biggest word, and staying hopeful and not cynical.
Yeah.
Couple right. more? We got plenty of time.
It's 8:22,
yeah.
So I'll just ask the next question. How can I keep faith as my top priority when at times I do not feel motivated to pursue this aspect of my life?
That is a great question. I think that is true for every single person. It's true for priests. It's true for lay people. There are days when we just don't want to do what we know we need to do. And I think there are two parts to this that are really important. One is that we live in an age of emotions, and we hear so much about authenticity and living into your emotions and all those kinds of things. And I would say, okay, sure, fine. But the fact of the matter is, when you know that something is right and true, you have to be invested in doing it. And what that means is that when you're not really feeling it about living into your faith as a priority, living into your devotional life, going to church, those are the times that it's most important to actually have the self-discipline to lean into those things. There's a great line in C.S. Lewis's book, The Screwtape Letters, which is a book about two demons strategizing about how to tempt this patient away from his Christian faith. And one of the things that, in that quotation, one of the demons says is our cause, that is the cause of the enemy of Satan, Our cause is never more in danger than when the patient, that is the Christian, looks around upon a landscape from which every trace of God seems to have vanished and asks why he has been forsaken and still obeys. And I think there's a deep truth in that, that in those times that we push through, when we don't really feel it, those are the times when we often go deeper and go to a deeper level. The second part of that, I think, is accountability. We need to have people who are going to ask us, how's your spiritual life going? How, you know, I haven't seen you in church, and, you know, is everything okay? You know, those sorts of things, keeping each other accountable about our spiritual disciplines can be really helpful.
I don't have anything. That's, yeah, exactly what I would have said. It's really good.
Surprise, surprise.
All right. How do I not complain?
How do I not complain?
All right. So what you need to do is go on YouTube and find the Bob Newhart show clip that says, just stop it, and watch it. Seriously. But I think one of the best things you can do is to make a conscious effort to notice how much you complain. And every time that you complain, either make a little tick mark on a piece of paper or
a little shock collar like a dog. There you go.
Whatever works for you, Justin. But I think being aware how much you complain, most of us are totally not aware that we complain a lot every single day. So becoming aware is, I think, the first part of it. The second thing is actively seeking to practice gratitude, because it's almost impossible to complain when you are actively seeking to practice gratitude, when you are looking for things to be thankful for.
Yeah. I mean, I'm joking about wearing a dog collar and shock. But if you think about it, that's how you train anything. Is
right.
You become aware,
right.
I do this a lot, and you need a little bit of shocking realization that this is how much I do it.
Yeah.
And just a resolute commitment that involves other people who will hold you accountable is the best way to go.
Yeah, and it's great to memorize that verse from Philippians that says, do everything, that's a pretty strong, inclusive statement, do everything without complaining or arguing, that you may shine like stars in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation as you hold out the word of life. And we don't usually think of not complaining as being a strategy for evangelism and sharing our faith, but that actually is, because complaining is so universal that if you have someone who is actually practicing gratitude all the time and not complaining, it will get people's attention.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because you have to have something positive that you're working towards, and the practicing gratitude is something you can commit to trying to do better.
Yeah.
All right, we got a few more?
There's a couple more. Is the question whether or not to enter a relationship or marry better off based on whether you feel called to be a spouse or parent, or just based on true love? Can we read it?
One more time.
Okay. Is the question whether or not to enter a relationship or marry better off based on whether you feel called to be a spouse or parent, or just based on true love?
Or none of the above.
Or none of,
yes.
No, that's not it.
So I would say none of the above. So I don't think that a decision to enter into a relationship is based on the idea that you think God is calling you to be a parent or a spouse, and so you're just looking for somebody to sort of fill that role. I don't think that is the way to go. I also think that it's not the way to go to just be consumed with what you're, and this all depends on how you define true love, but if you are emotionally infatuated with someone, which I would say is not true love, but is often what we think is true love, that's not a good basis for a relationship either. I think that actually what you want to do is to lean into the relationships that God has put in your path, where you feel and sense God's attraction to someone, and you lean into that with an open mind about what God may want to lead you to in that relationship in the future. I think that when your attitude is, I want to find a spouse, that is problematic. I think it's much better to be pursuing friendships with people of both genders, and then if God chooses to begin to open the door to something else there, that is where, as you're praying into it, that I think you will find God's leading.
I don't think it's bad to want to be married and want to have children.
No, certainly
not. That's not what you're saying. You're saying that if that's the driving force, then that's a problem. So,
yeah.
I love the way you answered it. The whole time I was thinking about the priest and the princess bride who talks about marriage and true love. And I was off in another world thinking about that.
Yeah,
so you had a great
thing,
answer.
Jessica. Yeah. I mean, you do you, right?
I liked your answer, yeah.
All right, maybe one more.
One more. We got to end on a good one.
All right. This person says, I tend towards nostalgia. Is that as bad as Lot's wife looking back? Is there a healthy way to approach this without disassociating from the past?
Oh, I love that question. So nostalgia, I think, is a beautiful thing. You knew you were going to get a C.S. Lewis thing in here somewhere after Screwtape, but Lewis talks a lot about this idea called Sehnsucht, which is a fancy German word that means longing, that's sort of associated with nostalgia, and kind of the image he uses for it is when you think about that vacation that you were on when you were a small child that just seemed magical in every way, and that you would love to go back to it, but you know that you can't, and that's part of what Lewis calls the stab of joy. There's joy in remembering, but there's sadness in knowing that you can't go back to it. And I think the way that we experience that Sehnsucht or nostalgia can be just like that. That we can be very thankful, that we can practice gratitude looking back and actually spend some time thinking about what that was like and how beautiful it was, but also acknowledging that that was a gift from God for that moment and for that time, and that part of what makes it special is that it's not repeatable. And that instead of mourning that, to be grateful that we had that glimpse of that beauty and that time, and to turn that nostalgia to gratitude.
So one of the things in my mind about nostalgia is that while it obviously looks back, there's still an element that, I don't know what you think about this, but it in some ways also drives you to the future, mm-hmm. where you look back, everything you just said is absolutely spot on, that you enjoy this thing so much. And in this season that you're in, you don't have it. But everything good that God makes in some ways will be fulfilled when he returns.
Yep.
And I think as a Christian, you can have that nostalgia that appreciates and experiences gratitude, but knows that it's not lost for good. That whatever glimpse that you had, it also drives you towards the restoration that God is going to consummate at the end.
Yeah.
Would you? Yeah.
Read C.S. Lewis's The Last Battle. It's all about that.
Yeah. So I think that's a healthy nostalgia. That's not just immobilized and just stuck looking back, but actually, in some ways, healthy nostalgia drives you forward, I think.
Yeah.
So. Well, guys, thanks so much for coming out. We'll be around. We'll continue the conversation. Feel free to hang out. Come look at the book up here. And check your email, because we are not going to be back in 2 weeks here. But we hope to be. We'll have some solution as to exactly what we're going to do.
And we will let you know.
We will
so
let
you
know.
Have to be
Thank you all for coming
Thanks
out.
For coming.
Hey.